What you're about to see is extremely unsettling and very uncomfortable.
Ladies and gentlemen, after the longest absence my heart could handle, I am proud to announce the return of my Aunt Dee, Dixie Carter. It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
I'm fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 392 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, July 19, 2015. I am the Solid Monster. It is Battleground Sunday, or as Daniel Bryan called it on Tough Talk this week, Battlefield, which he was promptly ridiculed for, and then he very astutely pointed out that the man sitting next to him in the red and yellow referred to the Superdome as the Silver Dome. Or at least that's what Bryan meant to say. He messed up his own comeback and said Superdome, but we all know what he meant. Daniel Bryan is not retiring, by the way, just to kill that stupid rumor dead. We've got a very special audio question in this week's mailbag of a special mystery guest. This man has a question that he needs answered, and I shall do my best to do so. You'll definitely want to stick around for that. But first, Audible is offering listeners of The Sound Off a free audiobook of your choice, along with a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/solomonster. We're having kind of a slow month of July, so we really need you guys to kind of kick it up a notch. If you haven't already taken advantage of it, now would be a great time to do so and boost those numbers up a bit and help out the podcast. So go to audibletrial.com/solomonster. You have over 180,000 different audiobook titles to choose from. Lots of wrestling books like Chris Jericho's book, Shawn Michaels' book, Dusty Rhodes' book. Just punch in our URL, audibletrial.com/solomonster, and you can go through the sign-up process from there. Once you have done so, you can cash in your free audiobook, which you get to keep, even if you cancel your trial membership before it expires. You get to keep that book no matter what. And if you like what you hear every week here on the podcast, please consider making a PayPal donation on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. $30 or more, and beyond the nickname, you will get a quick plug for your own podcast or YouTube channel if you have one. So you can do so on thesolomonster.com. PayPal box is there on the right-hand side. Thank you to everybody who has contributed this week, including Chuck Lunatic Lentz, Yvonne Bruiser Balak, Eugene Crazy Eyes Morgan, Joe Armbar Armenta Jr., The Dark Serpent, Derek Gibbs, Paul Lucky Boy Lucenti, Killshot Keith Hart, Mustang Matt Sombera, Arrogant Alex Matthews, and Hard Times Hank Spaulding. Thank you very much for your donations. Again, you can make one anytime you want to on thesolomonster.com. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Quick Chikara update before we get into the Battleground stuff here. I mentioned Mike Quackenbush last week was teasing a new Chikara show airing on Wednesdays, as if Wednesdays is not a busy enough night for wrestling as it is. He announced this week that Journey into Chikara, which is the name of the show, is going to be airing for a limited time only on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time beginning July 29th, and it will air live on Chikaratopia, which is their streaming service they charge $7.99 a month for, as well as live on YouTube. And I guess the way that's going to work is it'll be archived on Chikaratopia after the fact, but I believe those are two separate things, and it'll be airing live not only on there, but on YouTube as well if you're not a Chikaratopia member. So it is a YouTube show after all, which I said it probably would be. And I'm going to try to check it out. I mean, I don't get to watch hardly any Chikara. I mean, I'm aware of it. I've seen shows before. It looks like a ton of fun. This probably would be a good way, if you're not familiar with it, to familiarize yourself with some of the key players and what the product is. And I know a lot of you are going to be turned off by it, and a lot of you may get a kick out of it. So I would absolutely recommend checking that out. I will try to do so myself. Battleground is this, I was going to say this Sunday. It's tonight on the WWE Network from St. Louis, Missouri. There will be potential spoilers discussed here, so if you absolutely do not want to know anything that might happen, I suggest you skip ahead by about 10 minutes. Although by now, if you've been on the internet for any length of time this week, it's almost impossible to avoid some of the rumors that are out there. First of all, Ryback is off the pay-per-view. He's got a staph infection in his right knee, so there will be no Intercontinental title match at Battleground. I swear that championship is cursed. I said in the mailbag last week they should unify the IC and US titles, but keep it as the Intercontinental. I'm starting to think maybe that's a bad idea. Maybe they should just keep it as the US. Might bring better luck that way. As best as I can tell, I don't think there's going to be any sort of match involving Big Show or Miz. I think those guys, I mean, maybe they'll be in a segment, but I don't believe there's going to be, at least as of right now, they haven't announced any matches. They may add a match or two at the last minute, but I'm thinking, from what I've read, it may be something along the lines of Stardust and Neville or Cesaro and Rusev, but I think these guys are off the show. Let's start from the top this time, and then we'll work our way down the card. Brock Lesnar and Seth Rollins in the main event for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. I've been giving this a lot of thought in my mind. I've kind of been, you know, I've thought all along Seth Rollins is walking out with the championship. It just seems way too obvious that Brock's going to go in there. He's going to destroy him. He's going to take back the title. And I never really bought into that. And with all the rumors and speculation that's popped up in the last few days, I kind of wanted to waver back and forth a little bit, but I'm going to stick to my guns on this. There were rumors about The Undertaker potentially coming back and maybe even getting involved in the main event on the show, or maybe just popping up on Raw tomorrow night. There is no guarantee he will be on the show, even if he comes back. They may save his return for television tomorrow. We don't know. But initially, that's all it was. It was just a rumor. And, you know, we've heard rumors like this before. Oh, The Undertaker is maybe going to come back. And he never does. The last time we saw The Undertaker wrestle a match outside of WrestleMania was probably 2013. He did a couple of matches on TV, including that SmackDown match against Dean Ambrose. Then The Shield laid him out, and he got hurt. And so he was gone for the rest of the year. Before that, you might have to go back to, the last time you wrestled a match, a non-Mania match on TV, maybe 2010? I mean, it's, you know, his matches are few and far between these days. So when this was initially mentioned, I thought to myself, all right, we've heard this before. You know, we've been down this road before. I piped up on Twitter and I said, hey, you know what? Maybe it's not The Undertaker. Maybe these reports of a big name coming back and maybe getting involved, maybe it's not The Undertaker. Maybe it's Batista who's coming back. Maybe Big Dave interferes in the main event on Sunday and he costs Brock Lesnar the championship, and that leads to a match between the two of them at SummerSlam. You know, the ratings are down. They're looking for a big marquee match at this next pay-per-view. I think Batista against Lesnar would qualify. And I also think Dave would probably love the chance to work with Brock. I mean, if he's spoken to poor Jamie Noble lately, I'm not sure why he would want to. But I thought maybe this Undertaker talk is all just a swerve and it's actually Big Dave. Well, it doesn't look that way. Dave Meltzer in the Wrestling Observer newsletter this week reported that there is advertising out in some places that has both Undertaker and Sting listed for SummerSlam, although not necessarily against one another. In fact, the more I think about the possible scenarios here, I've been wondering. I don't know that I actually think this will happen, but I have been wondering if they would, instead of putting them against each other, which is a match that a lot of people want to see, maybe they would team them up. They would do kind of the Cena Rock thing from Survivor Series a few years ago and actually put Undertaker and Sting together as a team against Seth Rollins and Triple H of the Authority. Which, if they did that, that would mean that Brock would win the championship, probably with help from either Taker or Sting tonight. But then the question shifts to, okay, who does Lesnar defend against at SummerSlam if he's not defending against either one of those guys? And I don't see Undertaker or Sting getting a WWE title match. So then who does he defend against? I mean, Sheamus has the Money in the Bank briefcase, but he's a heel. So it's not like Sheamus is going to come out on TV tomorrow night and announce a month in advance, hey, Brock, I'm letting you know now I'm going to challenge you for the championship at SummerSlam. Why would he do that? You know, and Sheamus is booked more as a cowardly heel. And who in their right mind would announce a championship match against Brock Lesnar in advance? You know what I mean? The way to do it is the way that Rollins did it at WrestleMania. So I don't see that happening. They've got to announce a match for Brock. They can't just have, Sheamus come out that night. Brock has no match and he cashes in. Obviously, it's not going to work that way. There's Randy Orton, right? That's a match that I pitched for WrestleMania next year, Orton versus Lesnar, for the second time ever. Thank you to everybody who corrected me. The many, 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 many of you who corrected me and pointed out that Lesnar and Orton actually did wrestle on SmackDown one time over a decade ago. I must have blacked it out of my mind because, you know, if it happened on SmackDown, it didn't happen. But I just find this all fascinating. You know, ratings are down. They're at their lowest level since 1997, on average. There's no competition from football for them to blame it on. I mean, last week, I guess you had the home run derby, but it's not like last week was the only bad rating they've had this month. I mean, imagine how bad it's going to be when football comes back in a couple of months. I mean, yikes. So they're going to get their big guns out to boost ratings. They want to boost interest in the product. The Undertaker stuff, it does make a lot of sense. I will say, you know, one of our listeners, David, emailed me. He brought up the frequent mentions of Undertaker on television lately by Paul Heyman. It seems like Heyman's been mentioning it more often now than he has been in recent months. The mocking last week of Kane being the Undertaker's little brother. Kane's mentions on Monday night to Rollins of having this great plan. Right now, Rollins shit all over Kane at the end of the show Monday night. He even stomped on Kane's broken ankle. That's the storyline now, is that Kane's ankle is broken. But it was Brock Lesnar who did the breaking. Rollins crapped all over Kane for his shitty plan with that contract signing. Maybe Rollins didn't give it a chance to work. Maybe there is a greater plan that Kane came up with. And maybe it's his brother, The Undertaker. I mean, I guess Undertaker must be doing well enough physically to where he feels he can do more than just one match this year. Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen his medical chart or anything like that, unless Adam Schefter wants to post it online. But I watched the guy, and he looked better against Bray Wyatt this year than he did against Brock Lesnar last year. So there may be something to the argument that, listen, the guy was concussed, he had his bell rung, and so that's why the match with Brock last year was such shit. Which it was, I'm sorry, but it was not a good match. Maybe that's why it was so bad. You know, I saw that photo online last week of Undertaker training at DeFranco's gym. Joe DeFranco is the guy who trains Triple H and Stephanie, so I assume that's the connection there. And he looked good. I mean, it's just one photo. He was flexing his bicep, but, you know, he looked good. So the seeds have been planted for an Undertaker return. An Undertaker return is imminent. It may have already happened by the time some of you listen to this. Before this all blew up, I really didn't think Brock was winning the title. I like him to, but I just don't see it. And I still don't. I'm not changing my prediction. I don't think Brock Lesnar is winning the championship. I just don't think they want the champion missing house shows again. It was fine for that initial run. They wanted to build Brock up as this unstoppable monster to have somebody beat him at WrestleMania. Probably Roman Reigns. Had the fans not turned against him, it would have been him going over. For them to turn around a few months later, even if it's just for a month, and he drops it to Sheamus or somebody else at SummerSlam, I just don't see them wanting to put the title back on a guy who's not working house shows. Now, I don't see what the big deal is, because it's not so much, ooh, Seth Rollins is coming to town and he's defending the championship. Again, it's the brand, right? That's really what sells now. It's not one person. If it is one person, if anybody, it's probably John Cena, because John Cena has a demonstrated record of moving tickets. More than Daniel Bryan, more than Roman Reigns. When Cena is not around, even recently, you know, when Kevin Owens beat Cena. I mean, there were reports that there were certain things that WWE monitors, whether it's like merchandise, like t-shirt sales, that were down, and it spooked them. And I hope it didn't spook them enough for them to just kind of run back to John Cena. We gotta put the focus on him again, and he has to win all of his matches. Because at some point you've got to transition away from Cena, and I think they've started to do a decent job of that with the U.S. title stuff. He's at a level below, you know, whatever's going on right now with the world title. I think they need to start doing that. I hope, you know, whatever numbers they're looking at, I would hope it doesn't spook them into just putting Cena back in the top spot. You've got to go through that transition. The thing is, who do you have to replace Cena, right? And right now they don't have that person. Roman Reigns may get there, but he's not there yet. It could be somebody like a Sami Zayn eventually, or a Finn Balor, but they're not on the main roster. Probably won't be at all this year. Brock Lesnar, I mean, people are cheering for him right now, but, you know, he pops up every few weeks. You can't build around Brock Lesnar as the babyface of your company. So until they have somebody ready to replace Cena, I don't think you know, Cena's always going to be in that spot. But I just don't see them putting the title back on Brock. I think there's some sort of screw job. Somebody gets involved, Undertaker, whoever. I mean, here's what I think. I think I'm going to say that Undertaker shows up, costs Brock the title, probably also lays out Rollins. You know, Rollins can be all cocky and laughing, but then Undertaker lays him out as payback for what he did to Kane. What that means for SummerSlam, though, I have no idea. You know, do we really need to see Undertaker against Brock Lesnar again? Is that a match that we're all clamoring to see? I'm not. I mean, who does Rollins defend against then? That's the other aspect to it. I have no idea. Sting? That makes no sense. I actually think Rollins would be a great opponent for Sting to work with. I think if anybody can get a great match out of Sting, Rollins is the kind of guy who can go in there and just bump around for this guy. I think that'd be a great match, just not for the title. You know, like if Rollins was to lose the championship tonight, and you want to do a Sting-Rollins match at SummerSlam, fine. I have no problem with that. But I'm sticking with Rollins to retain here. That's my pick. I just have a gut feeling. I'm not changing my mind on that. We have Cena Owens 3 for the United States Championship, currently knotted up at one win apiece. This is the rubber match. After what happened on Monday night, we've seen Kevin Owens now fuck over a bunch of guys in their pursuit of that U.S. title. I think this time they give him a taste of his own medicine. I think Cesaro and or Rusev get involved in the match and cost Kevin Owens the championship. So I'm picking Owens to win by DQ. But John Cena retains the U.S. title. That's my official prediction. Maybe it leads to a four-way at SummerSlam, since Dolph Ziggler is probably going to still be off. He's filming a WWE movie for about a month. I don't know if he'll be back in time for SummerSlam. Maybe he'll be back in time to do a run-in at SummerSlam, but I don't think it's going to be him against Rusev, which means what do you do with Rusev? Well, a four-way with those guys would make sense. So that's my pick. Owens wins by DQ. Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns, I have a feeling this is the first of many, many matches we're going to get between these two. And I can't pick a winner here, so I'm going to say no contest. I'm going to say they brawl, maybe into the crowd, a double countout, or double DQ, some sort of non-finish, no contest decision that leads to a rematch at SummerSlam is my prediction. Randy Orton against Mr. Money in the Bank, Sheamus. I'm going to go with Sheamus to get the win, even though that goes against the pattern of how they usually book these Money in the Bank winners who lose and lose and lose and lose, and then they win the championship. And then you wonder why they're not over. Primetime Players against the New Day for the tag team titles. I think it's time to put those belts back on the New Day. I like the Primetime Players. I think Titus has been gold on commentary the couple of times I've heard him. But, you know, you could drag this out and bounce the titles back and forth between them. I don't know why they took the titles off New Day in the first place. New Day finally got to a place where they were, I say over, but, you know, they were getting reactions. They were kind of entertaining in that annoying, I want to see these guys get their asses kicked kind of way. And they took the titles off them. And I still don't quite understand why they did that unless the plan is just to put them back on them. And I think it is. And I think they're going to win the belts back tonight. And then the kickoff match, which we've seen on the kickoff show before and probably where this match belongs. King Barrett against R-Truth. I guess it's a match to determine who the I don't know who the jobber king is of WWE, I guess. I don't know. They're claiming this is going to be their final match, as though this is supposed to be some sort of epic encounter. We'll see. I'm going with King Barrett. This guy's got to get a win at some point. I mean, I know he has won a few matches. They've traded wins back and forth. But to me, I look at Barrett and I see a loser. Every time I look at this guy, he's losing another match. He's got to win one at some point. It's just the law of averages here. So I'm going to go with King Barrett. And that's the rundown. They'll probably add a couple matches, I would imagine, to the show. But it's a pretty solid lineup, and I've been looking forward to Lesnar and Rollins for a long time. I figured they would save it for SummerSlam, but we're getting it a month early instead. Plans change. But it's a match I think that had to happen. I think Rollins can go in there and be one of Brock's better opponents. I really do. I think it's going to be a great match with some sort of, disputed finish. And that will pave the way for whatever they have planned for SummerSlam. Courthouse News is a website that runs various legal stories. They had a story this week on a security guard and his wife suing WWE. I just got done talking about frivolous lawsuits on the show last week. You could add this one to the pile. So a security guard, he worked the WWE house show in 2013, 2 years ago, claims that he was injured by a WWE wrestler. He's not sure who. He thinks it was Dean Ambrose, but he's not sure because his back was turned when it happened. He was hurt when said mystery wrestler, whoever it was, threw a steel chair at him. And now he claims he suffers various debilitating injuries. But because he doesn't know exactly who did it, and his attorney admits he still hasn't seen video from the event, which, mind you, took place 2 years ago, they have listed every single performer on the card that night as a defendant. And the article here lists them all by their real names. So we have John Cena, we have Tim Works, I'm not even sure who that is, Ryan Reeves, Leati, Joseph Anoa'i, Colby Lopez, Glenn Thomas Jacobs, Brian Danielson, Curtis Jonathan Hussey, Ronnie Aaron Killings, Aaron Stephen Haddad, who I think is Mandow, Claudio Castagnoli, and Cody Garrett Runnels. They're all listed as defendants in this lawsuit. And the guy claims he's suffering from serious, significant, and permanent personal injuries. He's suffering from mental anguish, diminishment of his earning capacity, and a loss of enjoyment of life, thanks to WWE's negligence. And here's the kicker. The guy's wife is also suing, claiming she has lost conjugal fellowship due to her husband's injuries. I guess inferring that he can no longer rise to the occasion because of his this chair, this violent chair that he was struck by. What was the chair made out of? Concrete? I want to take a look at this chair. Maybe it was that giant chair that Big Show had made for him a few years ago. Remember that thing? We only saw it like once. Maybe if you got hit by that chair, I can actually buy into this. WWE claims they have absolutely no record of any such incident, nor does the security company who hired the guy to work the show. And that's because this guy is probably full of shit. So that's the latest frivolous lawsuit filed against WWE. Monday Night Raw this past week was live from Atlanta, Georgia. The Divas Revolution is what everybody is talking about. So we may as well start with that. We had a segment where the Bella Twins were out there with Alicia Fox. They're a trio now. Nikki is on her quest for 300 days as the Divas champion. There's no more competition left for them, she says. Out comes Stephanie McMahon, like she's the mother and the Bellas are her little brat children. She said there's a revolution going on right now with women in sports. She mentioned UFC. She mentioned the U.S. women's soccer team. She then brought out Paige. And then Stephanie introduced us to Becky Lynch and Charlotte from NXT. And they both hugged Paige. So we have a threesome now. Well, not that kind of threesome, but we have Paige, Charlotte. Actually, that would be a hell of a threesome. But we have Paige, Becky, and Charlotte are together. The Bellas and Foxy, like I said, they're another threesome. Naomi and Tamina come out. They complain to Stephanie McMahon about not being given a fair shake, which when you really look at it, you could really make the case that Naomi was kind of fucked over. She really should have won that championship a couple of months ago. But they've got Nikki on this quest for 300 days, so they didn't want to take the title off of her. So they're out there telling Stephanie, oh, it's not fair. Stephanie agreed, and then she introduced Sasha Banks, the current NXT Women's Champion, who stood with Naomi and Tamina. So they all get in the ring. A giant brawl breaks out. It ends with the NXT Women all applying their finishing moves simultaneously. And I will say it made for a great visual. And the place was going nuts, and they were chanting NXT, NXT. I liked it. I liked it for two reasons. A, the fans bought into it on day one, which is important. It's very important, you know. Everyone else is supposed to buy into this as a big deal going forward. If you do this angle in front of a crowd that doesn't give a shit about the women and they just are silent and they crap all over it, it just ruins it. It ruins the whole thing. But they were totally into this. They were going nuts, almost more for this than anything else on the show. And B, we finally have some fresh blood in the women's division on this show. It has been long overdue. We've been begging. I've been begging for it. I know some people don't care about the women, but I've been just begging for this. And finally, we got it. They delivered. In one fell swoop, we have three new faces on this show. So, for once, the women were the highlight of Raw, not one of the lowlights. Now, with that out of the way, I am taking a wait-and-see approach on this before I get too excited. I know Triple H is behind the NXT girls because they're his kids. He wants to see them do well. And I think it's also a great reflection on him if they do well. Okay, even if he was just being purely selfish about it. I know, Triple H being selfish, what a concept. I don't think he is, and I don't think he's being purely selfish in this case. I really do think he cares. He wants to see them do well. Even so, though, it's in his best interest to see them do well. Right? I mean, he's the granddaddy of NXT. These NXT guys come up like a Kevin Owens. It's in his best interest that they do well, because if they flop and they fall on their face, it makes Triple H look bad. So he's got plenty of reasons to want to see this thing succeed. The problem is, he's not the one running the show. Okay? Vince McMahon is still the one running the show. 70 years old, he's still at it. It's Vince's show. And Vince McMahon does not believe in women's wrestling. I mean, I don't know Vince McMahon personally. I've only met the guy once, and I was 12 years old at the time. But if you've watched WWE for any length of time, going back to the 80s, okay, the proof is right there in front of your face. Rarely have the women ever moved ratings except Sable. And Sable wasn't marketed as a wrestler. She was marketed as this hot chick with big boobs who posed for Playboy. And back in the Attitude Era, that got over real well. Sable was a huge star. She actually did move numbers. But yeah, generally speaking, the women don't move ratings. The women don't sell tickets. They don't headline the shows generally. But all of that, it's all misleading because they've never been given the chance, right? Maybe they wouldn't draw. Maybe if you gave them the chance, the people just wouldn't care. You give it a month, the ratings go down even more. You look at the quarter hour breakdowns and the women's segments are always down near the bottom of the pack. Maybe that would happen. Maybe if they were the ones getting the 20-minute promo segments to open the show each week instead of the Authority, and they were the ones getting a main event match at the top of the hour, maybe the ratings would bomb. Or maybe not. Maybe they'd go up a little bit, right? We went through a period many years ago where the Knockouts and TNA were the highlight of the show. Gail Kim and Awesome Kong single-handedly built that division up into something special. And at the time, when TNA's ratings were a lot higher than they are these days, the women were drawing the highest segments on the entire show. So it's not impossible to build around a handful of women, 3, 4, 6, you know, pick your girls, whoever they're going to be, and build around them with compelling storylines. Don't just throw them out there in meaningless matches, 2 minutes, go home, and the match is over. You've got to come up with stories. You've got 20, 25 different writers on your team. I always say this. I don't understand why, with all the writers that they have, people who have worked in the company say, well, one of the problems is all these writers. They have an army of writers, right? This is not just the dirt sheet speaking. This is how they operate. They have a team of writers. Some of them are wrestling fans. Some of them maybe have never watched wrestling a day in their life until they got the job. They're Hollywood writers. They're soap opera writers. You've got so many different people, and I never understood why you can't take one writer, maybe two writers, and say to those two people, your sole job is to focus on the women. Take another two writers. Your sole job is to make sure that we fill in all of those little logic gaps that Vince McMahon doesn't care about. You know, Chris DeJoseph, who is the writer for Lucha Underground now, he was Big Dick Johnson in WWE, but he was one of the head writers there. And he did an interview some time ago, and he said, you know, Vince, you know, the writers generally want things to make sense. It's not that they don't think of all these things that we think of. Oh, this doesn't make any sense. There's no logic to this. Many of them would think of that. But Vince doesn't think it's important, because Vince even made the comment to Joseph once. He said, I can't even remember what happened 3 weeks ago on the show. You think the fans are going to remember? But that's, I don't agree with that at all. There are plenty of fans who remember what happened 3 weeks ago. And the fact that it doesn't make any sense when you look at what happened last week. You know what I mean? So, but that's his mentality. To him, it's not important. They've got so many hours of TV to fill. I can't be bothered by these petty little things. Well, take one or two writers, and that's their job. Their only job is to get a rundown of everything that's going on and to give their feedback and make sure that it makes sense. Hey, guys, listen, you know, this. Let's tweak this a little bit. Let's have the announcers mention this, because this is what happened, you know, 6 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago on the show. You can designate those roles to these people. They've got like an army of these guys. But it's just not a priority to them. And the women have never been a priority in WWE, like for a while they were in TNA. And when TNA put them in that role, they thrived. Ratings went up. Of course, TNA didn't know how to take advantage of that. They didn't know how to market that, so it was for nothing, and then the division fell apart after a while. But it's very much doable. There are some people that just don't think women's wrestling can ever draw, and I don't believe that. 25 million people tuning in for a women's soccer game. Ronda Rousey doing unbelievable business on pay-per-view in the main event for a fight that goes all of 14 seconds. And people know that. That's part of the appeal of Ronda Rousey, is that she finishes her opponents quickly. Okay, there's plenty of evidence out there to suggest that people will watch women if you have the personalities that people want to get behind. And I know wrestling is fake and that stuff is real, and so it's a little bit different, but so what? It doesn't matter. You could say that about all of wrestling, right? But you got plenty of guys that have gotten over to very high levels, even though wrestling is entertainment. You know, it didn't stop Stone Cold from becoming a big star. It didn't stop The Rock from becoming a big star. And you could say the same thing about the women. I mean, I don't think they'll ever have a woman that probably gets to that level, but you know what? Maybe they do. What if Ronda Rousey had gone to WWE instead of UFC, and they allowed her to be herself, and you know, show her own personality in her promos, and you know, she's got that sex appeal and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm not saying she'd be doing 800,000 buys on pay-per-view like she's doing in UFC, but she'd get over as a megastar in a heartbeat if they gave her a chance. Now, the way WWE operates, and they kind of stifle a lot of creativity. You gotta, it's PG, you can't do this, you can't say that. Let's, you know, they got the scripted promos. I don't think you could take anybody from the sports world. Anybody working under those conditions is not going to go very far. But I just don't buy into that argument. I think if they put the effort behind it, you can make it work. They just choose not to. The other thing I didn't like about this was Stephanie just introducing everybody all at once like she's the MC doing introductions at the Atlanta Hawks game or something. You know, and here, they're coming down the aisle, it's Becky Lynch, and here comes Charlotte. I don't understand why she had to be involved here at all. They had a storyline where Paige has been outnumbered for weeks. The Bella Twins have beaten her down time after time after time. They've mocked her for not being able to find any partners. It would have made more sense for her to go back to her NXT roots and bring back Charlotte and Becky herself. You could introduce Sasha at a different time, a different week, and have her attack Charlotte and Becky, since she's had issues on NXT with both of them. And if you want to have them on opposing sides, which obviously they did, that's why they put Sasha with Naomi, and they split them up, I guess instead of doing something like an NXT invasion, they wanted at least one of them on the opposing side so they could work against each other, which is fine. I have no problem with more Sasha Banks versus Charlotte matches, especially if they're anything like the one we got this week on NXT. That's fine with me. You know, Sasha, Naomi, and Tamina are calling themselves Team Bad, best at dominating, which is not the first name I would have come up with. But Sasha Banks, here's the thing about Sasha Banks. Sasha Banks is fantastic. And I saw people were having like an epiphany this. Oh my God, I didn't realize she's only 23 years old. Yeah, she's very young. She's probably the second youngest diva they've got right now after Paige, I would think. And she is just fantastic. I'm a huge Sasha Banks fan. I genuinely look forward to her matches when she comes out. Pentagon Jr., Brock Lesnar, and Sasha Banks are my three favorite wrestlers right now. Imagine those three coming out together as a group. Okay, she'll do well in whatever they have her do. They want to put her with Naomi and Tamina? Fine. I'm sure she'll probably be the leader of that group, and she'll do fine. She'll do very well. The only other thing that bothered me, again, these things that I'm saying bothered me, they're minor points. I'm happy that, you know, these women are on TV now. But the other thing that did bother me was they just couldn't help themselves. They had to tie all of this in with Total Divas. Right, each of the NXT women just had to be on teams with at least one member of the Total Divas cast. Actually, is Naomi even still on the show? I don't know. I remember hearing that she was booted off. I don't know. Well, or was that Cameron? Maybe it was Cameron. I'm pretty sure Naomi is still on the show. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. And then when the segment ended, they played the theme song for Total Divas. So, anyway, it's a minor thing. I don't need to see these women corrupted by Total Divas their first night in. But they're finally here. Let's see if this supposed new era is just lip service or if Triple H has more influence than we think. Charlotte is on record as saying that she will headline a WWE pay-per-view one day. She will be in the main event of a pay-per-view. If that actually happens, we may look back on the show as the moment that things really began to change. The Cena stuff on this show I thought was just weird. Very weird heel-face psychology with Owens and Cesaro and Rusev fighting it out for the right to wrestle Cena for the U.S. title. And Cena's this, they're on commentary talking about how fresh he would be for the winter. I'm fresh. I'm 100%. I'm ready to go. And my opponent is going to be totally exhausted when this match is over. And meanwhile, the other three, they had a really long, like 20 minutes plus, really good triple threat match. Kevin Owens walked out midway through, finally realizing, what the fuck am I wrestling these two giant men for? I'm already getting a title shot in 6 days. It only took him 15 minutes of getting his ass kicked before he apparently realized this. Although before that, he was part of a cool double release German suplex spot by Cesaro. Cesaro just continues to impress every single week. The guy's on fire right now. You make the most of a bad situation sometimes. You know, Tyson Kidd almost died in the ring. We're learning more and more about this injury that Tyson Kidd suffered. We almost had a tragedy in the ring. I don't think people realize how close we came to having, like, another Owen Hart situation in the ring when, you know, he got hurt in that match against Samoa Joe. 5% of people who suffer the kind of neck injury he suffered don't even survive the injury, let alone walk again. He's lucky not to be in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. He and Cesaro had a good thing going. I was a big fan of their team. I was happy for Tyson Kidd. Finally, you know, he's in the middle of, like, the biggest push of his career. But Cesaro has taken advantage of a bad situation and making the most of the opportunity that he's been given. And I hope he gets rewarded for that. I really do. You know, so far he's been rewarded with TV time on Raw. I wasn't even sure they were going to put him on Raw. He's on Raw each week. He got a clean win over Rusev on SmackDown. The only person other than John Cena so far to beat Rusev clean in the middle of the ring is Cesaro. I want to see them keep that momentum going. Rusev did eventually win this match on Raw. He looked like he was about to drop dead when it was over. Cena got right into the ring, and you would think they were grooming Rusev to be a babyface, the way they booked this whole thing. I mean, maybe they will. Maybe they will go with my idea that I pitched and do a double turn when Ziggler comes back. Put Lana back with Rusev and make them a babyface pair. Maybe they were testing the waters here. People were getting behind Rusev. But if not, if that was not the idea, then this made absolutely no sense. Rusev did get Cena in the accolade. People cheered like they wanted a title change. Kevin Owens ran out for the DQ. He said, if anyone's going to beat Cena for the title, it's going to be me. This whole thing was just weird. Stardust was back. I will say, the comic book graphic that they aired before the match between him and Neville, I thought was badass. I thought that was very cool. Stardust got the win with a roll-up and a fistful of tights. I said on Twitter, you know, I don't know. It just seems like a wasted opportunity for them to just stick with the character, to not even play off, and I'm not even saying to play off the loss of Dusty Rhodes, because I saw, you know, he posted a tweet online, anybody who thinks I would agree to exploit the death of my father, that's not what this is about. It's not even about that. This guy's going to get sympathy no matter what, because it's still fresh in people's minds, and they know that this guy just lost his father. One of the biggest stars in the history of the business. His dad died. Okay, it's a shit feeling. Believe me, I know what that feels like. And you've got people who don't want to boo this man, right? You're going to have that reaction for a while. It's still too fresh in people's minds. But it's when I say this, it's not even about, well, they should exploit the fact that Dusty Rhodes died and have him come out and wear a Dusty Rhodes shirt and get cheered. I never said that. I said that because it seemed like before all of that happened, they were going down that path already where he would be shedding the Stardust character, right? He was growing increasingly frustrated with all of the losing, and they would zoom in on his facial expressions, and he would lose a match, and he looked exasperated, like, okay, I can kind of see where this is going. It looks like maybe they're winding down this character. And he was off TV for so many weeks after his father died. it seemed like it would make sense. Once he comes back, after all that time off, just let him be himself. Or give him a segment in the ring where he officially announces, you know, Cody Rhodes, Stardust is dead, Cody Rhodes is back. However they want to handle it. I read the blog that Eden, okay, his wife, posted online. She was very upset at some fans who apparently made some disrespectful comments. I don't know what that was all about. She was really pissed off. And I don't blame her. Here's the thing about the Stardust thing, the last thing I'll say about it. If that's not what he wants, if he wants to keep the Stardust character, you know, he's a big comic book geek. I know he's into that kind of stuff, and he was getting very creative with the different costumes and everything else. If he's genuinely into the Stardust character, and he's fighting for it, and he doesn't want it to end, and he wants to wrestle the Green Arrow guy at SummerSlam, which still may or may not happen, then more power to him. Do whatever makes you happy. It's really not that big of a deal. And then the show ended with the contract signing segment with Rollins and Lesnar, and in the end, Kane was the one who got his ankle broken by the steel steps, courtesy of Brock Lesnar, who chased Rollins away, and then Lesnar left. Rollins came back, cut a final promo on Lesnar, and then before he walked out, decided to add insult to injury by stomping on Kane's broken ankle, which I think will come back to haunt Seth Rollins. A decent show, noteworthy because of the women's stuff, real good action in that three-way with Cesaro and the two heels. Not much else to really speak of other than that. These shows are still lacking something, and I guess we'll see who comes back this week, and maybe that'll help freshen things up a little bit.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Tickets for NXT TakeOver Brooklyn went on sale this weekend. They actually had the pre-sale on Thursday, and I got completely shut out. Not a single ticket came up for me. So I waited until the official on sale yesterday, and hallelujah, I managed to nab four tickets in section 117. At least they aren't all the way up where you need binoculars. So I hope to see some of you guys there. I think I have fucking PTSD after sitting there dealing with Ticketmaster's bullshit these last few days. One surprising name that WWE has added to the show is Jushin Thunder Liger. William Regal said on Twitter, "Don't read too much into anything. It was just a matter of me phoning an old friend that I've known since 1986 to come in and work the show." It's not clear if WWE had to make the deal through the New Japan office or if they did so directly with Liger, since Liger, I guess, has the power to book his own dates. He's only part-time working for New Japan. If they are dealing with New Japan, that makes things very interesting. Ring of Honor is running its Field of Honor show in Brooklyn that same night with a bunch of New Japan guys, no less. Okada, Nakamura, Kushida, they're all wrestling on that show. I think Bullet Club may be on that show. And now we have WWE possibly making a deal through New Japan, who has a working agreement with ROH, for a guy to work the TakeOver show, which is in direct competition with the ROH show that same night. Liger is going to be wrestling Tyler Breeze on the show. We just saw Liger wrestle Dalton Castle on Ring of Honor TV a few weeks ago. The guy's a legend. He's 50 years old now, but the dude can still go. And to put that in perspective, as far as how long this guy's been around, Liger wrestled in the very first WCW Monday Nitro match against Brian Pillman at the Mall of America. That was back in 1995. In all of his years working around the world, he's never worked for WWE before, which is hard to believe. So I think that'll be a cool moment for him. I would think if it was Regal and WWE that approached Liger about doing the show as a favor and not the other way around, I would think that Liger will be the one going over in that match. And I don't think Tyler Breeze will even mind it. I think for Tyler Breeze, that's got to be a cool feeling for him. I mean, you get told, hey, in Brooklyn, you're going to get to work a match with Jushin Thunder Liger. I'd be like, fuck yeah. That's just probably his reaction when he found out the news. Jason Jordan and Chad Gable made their debut together, finally, as a tag team on NXT this week. Jason Jordan has run through a bunch of other partners, a bunch of losers. And Chad Gable the whole time is like, dude, I'm right here. Ready, willing, and Gable. So they worked a match against Elias Sampson and Steve Cutler, who people have said to me before that Steve Cutler bears a striking resemblance to me. I don't see it. I really I still see this guy every now and then when he comes out. I don't see it. Maybe I'm the only one. I wish I had a physique like Steve Cutler. I could tell you that much. This match here was not Gable's in-ring debut on TV. I'm pretty sure he wrestled once before. It might have been against Tyler Breeze. This would have been months ago. He's a very accomplished amateur wrestler, maybe the best amateur wrestler that WWE has had since Kurt Angle, which is funny because I watch this guy, and the first thing I think of when I see Chad Gable, I think of Kurt Angle. From the singlet to the Olympic background, this guy's an Olympian. I mean, he didn't win a gold medal like Angle did, but he won the trials, the Olympic trials in 2012. Still, though, that's not a bad person to be compared to. If he can pick this up as quickly as Kurt Angle did, this guy could be a big deal in a few years. So I would say that Chad Gable is a guy to watch out for. I really liked what I saw from him here. He did a lot of kind of mat wrestling, chain wrestling, amateur stuff, go-behinds and all that at the beginning. I also love the double-team finisher that they use where Jordan, he basically just throws the guy into the air, and Gable catches him coming down with a back suplex into a bridge for the pin. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun watching these two. These two guys are going to work out very well together, I think, as a team. Samoa Joe, who I heard got new music at the tapings this week, thank God, he beat Axel Tischer. All I know about Axel Tischer is that he is from Germany, and I know that because that's what they told me. Beyond that, I have no idea who this guy is. Joe beat him with the Muscle Buster into the Coquina Clutch for the tap out. They didn't actually use that name for the clutch, probably because these three legitimately have no idea what it's called. Joe's been a bust so far, I have to say. I assume that has to do with the fact that he's still finishing up his remaining indie dates. He's got dates through August. I assume after TakeOver next month, he'll be theirs full-time, and he'll be figured more prominently into things. So I wouldn't read too much into it until he has finished up all of those indie obligations. I mean, in 3 months, if they're still not doing anything with him, then I would be a little more concerned. He's just another guy. He's just another guy on the roster. We got a Baron Corbin video package with him getting a new leg tattoo in a tattoo parlor while running down all the top stars at NXT for being internet darlings and wrestling in front of 50 people on the indies while he won 4 conference titles in football all by himself. That's what he kept saying. 4 conference titles. See, that's impressive and all, but not nearly as impressive as Al Bundy scoring 4 touchdowns in a single game. Eva Marie came out to tell us that next week she will make her in-ring re-debut on NXT. The new and improved Eva Marie. Spanky approved. I can't wait for that. I'm not even like being facetious when I say that. I really am looking forward to that. Eva Marie was the first buy or sell I ever did on this show, and I called her a buy. I think she's going to end up impressing a lot of people. Blake and Murphy beat Angelo Dawkins and Sawyer Fulton with their running vertical suplex into a frog splash combo. I love the return of tag team finishers in WWE. Although this one was a little scary. Murphy had Dawkins up for a vertical suplex, a running vertical suplex, and he almost dropped him. I mean, he really had to muscle that guy up, and disaster was averted. He did not drop the man on his head. After the match, Blake and Murphy grabbed Alexa Bliss. They threw her, and I mean threw her, into the air because she's like 100 pounds. She twisted in midair and landed her sparkle splash on Sawyer Fulton. That was very impressive. Watching it, especially on the slow-mo replay when they showed Alexa flying through the air, that was very impressive. Not so much the part where Fulton had a sell for a 100-pound woman, but them throwing her into the air like that and twisting to hit the splash I thought looked very cool. Alexa has been a heel for all of, a month now, maybe? And she's already got her facials and her mannerisms down pat. I think heel Alexa is just fantastic. Sami Zayn walked out with his arm in a sling. He said 2014 was the best year of his career. 2015 has been the worst. He is not likely to be back until 2016, which is great timing for him to eliminate Kevin Owens from the Royal Rumble, and then wrestle him in the opener for WrestleMania. Wonder where I've heard that prediction before. He did promise to kick Kevin Owens' ass upon his return. We got highlights from the NXT panel at Comic-Con with William Regal announcing Finn Balor versus Kevin Owens for TakeOver in Brooklyn. Main event was Charlotte against Sasha Banks for the NXT Women's Championship. Great match. Not even the best match I've seen them have, but it was still a great match. I loved it. We even got a Flair strut by Sasha at one point to mock Charlotte, and Charlotte did the Flair flop, which I popped for. Charlotte's hair extension, this is funny, her hair extension somehow got ripped out during the match. I mean, a lot of hair fell out during this match. And had this happened on Raw, the fans probably would have mocked her for it, catcalled her for it. But they were so busy chanting, "This is awesome," they didn't even notice, or they didn't care. I don't know, I thought that was a telling moment as far as how the women are viewed down there at Full Sail. At NXT as opposed to the main roster. Hopefully they'll bring a lot of that to the main roster and they'll actually make a change up there. Sasha nailed Charlotte with the knees to the back, rolled her over into the bank statement. See, the great thing about Charlotte in a move like this is how flexible she is. She's a gymnast. So she can bend back further than most normal people can. It's like Melina taking a sharpshooter from Natty back in the day. I swear to God, there was this one time I thought Natty broke her back. She pulled as far back on a sharpshooter as I have ever seen anyone pull back on this move with Melina. It hurt just to watch, but it made for a great visual because Melina was so bendy. And so did this. This made for a great visual too, and Charlotte had no choice but to tap out. Sasha retains her women's championship. She's in tears after the match. The two of them cried, they hugged to end the show. I'd make a joke about women crying again, but I won't, because this was such a great moment. I really hope they get the chance to do what they do on the main roster. I think it'll be a total travesty if they end up just like every other woman on the roster. I think it'll just be such a travesty if that happens. ProWrestlingTees.com is your one-stop shop for all things Sound Off. We've got a ton of different t-shirt designs up there right now, including the official Sound Off logo shirt, the Eat Sleep Sound Off repeat shirt, and original designs as well, like Let Me School You, Son, and It's Not Rocket Science, People. And it's not rocket science that you should go right now to our store, ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off, and get yourself a shirt, maybe two. They ship all over the world, so if you are an international fan of the show, fear not, you can get your own Sound Off shirt. You can also pay via credit card or PayPal, whatever works best for you. So head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. Buy yourself a Sound Off shirt. The next time you go to Monday Night Raw, TNA, Ring of Honor, or just out with the family, you can represent the Sound Off with an official Sound Off t-shirt. Again, visit ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off and get your shirt right now. PW Insider broke the news on Wednesday that Hernandez, who just returned to TNA as a member of the Beatdown Clan, he replaced Low-Ki, who left the promotion, is now gone from TNA himself after Lucha Underground reached out to TNA to let them know that Hernandez is still under contract to them and was never legally allowed to appear on TNA television in the first place. Oops! This is one of those LOL TNA stories, I think, that will fit nicely in that book I mentioned a few weeks ago. Chapter 238. I'm not sure if one has anything to do with the other or if it's just a coincidence, and it's probably not a coincidence. But MVP has also parted ways with TNA. Now, he had said his contract was not up until February, so it had to be something that he asked for. So I guess another one bites the dust. The story with Hernandez is that he told TNA he was free and clear. He had no contractual obligations to anyone else, including Lucha Underground. MVP was really pushing hard for him to come in, and so they signed him. It sounds like Hernandez really fucked over TNA here, even though TNA bears a lot of blame for allowing this to happen. They don't get off the hook for this at all. I mean, how the hell do you not check to make sure that this guy is not under contract? That should have been the first thing that they did. But they took his word for it, and it bit them on the ass. Apparently, Hernandez, he did ask Lucha Underground for his release. They were supposedly in the process of granting him one. The only thing they asked is that he respect the non-compete and not show up anywhere on television before August 5th. August 5th is the date of their Ultima Lucha show. He's got a match on that show with Drago. Well, Hernandez does what Hernandez wants. And he showed up immediately on TNA television, even though his release was not finalized yet. So now anything involving the BDC has to be pulled from the episodes they've already taped. They taped weeks in advance, and a lot of BDC segments. So they have to remove all of that now. That includes matches where Hernandez may have been in MVP's corner, matches where he may have been in Kenny King's corner. There was a tag team title match. There was a steel cage match that he was a part of. I think there was a ladder match that may have been some kind of number one contenders match that he was part of. All of that stuff, out the window. And instead, TNA has to replace those segments with footage from older shows, which is, they already started doing that on Impact this week. They re-aired the James Storm Magnus match from Slammiversary. Two guys who aren't even in TNA anymore. Magnus is gone, and Storm is gone. And they may be filming some new stuff next week, because I think they have new tapings next week. So they may film some new stuff that they can insert into some of the upcoming shows, so it's not just old stuff. Yeah, I guess it's too bad Christian can't lend Hernandez his blue dot for a few weeks. They could just place a blue dot over his face when he comes out. How great would that be? You know, when Hernandez walks out, he's got that swagger in his step. Imagine a blue dot swaggering down to the ring. What a mess. This whole fucking thing. I mean, you know, it was a real dick move by Hernandez, and it was a boneheaded move by TNA, by their management, to even allow something like this to happen. Now everybody is fucked. Hernandez is fucked. MVP is gone. The Beatdown Clan is dead. Kenny King is fucked. He just tweeted something. He tweeted decisions on Friday, so he may not be in TNA much longer. The entire TNA promotion is fucked. But we already knew that. I mean, put it this way. You know things are bad when TNA Mecca, of all places, one of the lone sanctuary online for the TNA diehards who just flat out refuse to accept reality, when the moderator at TNA Mecca posts a column titled, "There's Something Rotten in the State of TNA," and he talks about the Hernandez fiasco as inexcusable and incompetence at its worst. When you've lost those people, you know you've done something wrong. Ring of Honor. On Destination America, this was episode 199 of ROH TV. The Big 200 comes this week. Although, I guess technically it's already aired on Sinclair stations. Show opened with Matt Sydal beating Adam Page of the Decade with the Shooting Star Press. The Decade ganged up on Sydal after the match. ACH ran down for the save. He got beaten down. He got held down by BJ Whitmer. He was forced to watch Adam Page pick up Sydal and deliver his rite of passage pile driver on top of a bunch of steel chairs. They had brought a whole ton of steel chairs into the ring. They were beating down ACH with a chair. So they got this pile of steel chairs in the middle of the ring. And Page gets the guy up. So this rite of passage move, he gets the guy up like you would for an Alabama slam. He's kind of holding him over his shoulders by the guy's legs. Or the Holly Cost, as Bob Holly called it for all of a week before somebody in WWE realized what a stupid idea that was. And instead of thrusting your opponent forward and slamming him down like you normally would for the move, you just keep him dangling behind you and you fall down. You drop down for a pile driver. ACH and Page are going to have a match at Death Before Dishonor on iPay-Per-View on July 24th, hence why ACH ran down to attempt to make the save. He did a poor job of it. Will Ferrara pinned Silas Young in an upset when Dalton Castle's Young Boys ran down and distracted Silas. So a distraction roll-up on this show. The virus is spreading. I know there are good distraction roll-ups. It's okay to do them every now and then. This is the first time I've seen one since I started watching ROH, so I will excuse it, but I don't want to see this happening all the time. Silas grabbed one of the Young Boys after the match, gave him a draping DDT on the ropes like Randy Orton does, and then he laid him out with his misery finish, which is an airplane spin into a diamond cutter. Main event was Jay Lethal, the dual champion, ROH World Champion and Television Champion, defending his TV title against Mark Briscoe. Roderick Strong was on commentary. He challenges Lethal for the world title at Death Before Dishonor. There was a bunch of interference in this match. Jay Diesel and Donovan Dijak of the House of Truth got involved. Jay Briscoe ran down. He got involved. There was a low blow delivered to Mark Briscoe by Dijak, which the referee did not see, and that led to Jay Lethal hitting the Lethal Injection for the pin. Roderick Strong ran in after the match. He went after Lethal, chased him away, and then Roddy got on the mic and said, "Hey, there's three of us, and there's three of you. Let's have a six-man tag next week on the 200th episode of ROH. And then ODB. I forgot to mention ODB. She is out there with the Briscoes now. She took the mic and said, oh, not so fast. There's actually four of us and four of them. Let's make it an eight-person tag, including herself and Truth Martini. And Jay Lethal agreed to the match, and so the main event is set for next week. So I liked it. It was a good show. Not a show, you know, if you missed it, you didn't miss anything. So it wasn't a really important show, but it was good. I thought the commentary was especially good by Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino. I'm becoming more a fan of their work each passing week. They're slowly becoming my favorite announced team. Matt Stryker and Vamp are good. I like them. I still like them. But the more I hear of these guys, I like their chemistry. And Corino is a pretty funny guy, so that helps. Lucha Underground. Lucha Underground did not, unfortunately, get that Emmy nomination after all. They announced the final nominations for the Emmys this week, and Lucha Underground was left off the list. Somewhere out there, a beaver is smiling. This week, the focus was on the remaining ancient Aztec medallions. Bengala, the Catman. That's what I call him. He beat Daivari in the opening match to win one of the medallions. Matt Stryker could not help himself. He made just a ton of bad cat jokes. Vampiro had something to get off his chest after what happened with Pentagon last week, so he got in the ring. And he talked about Pentagon asking him for a match, and he says, look, my time has come and gone. And Pentagon came down, told him to stop talking crap. He wants an answer. Will Ian Hodgkinson face him at Ultima Lucha, yes or no? And that was the setup for Vampiro to say, no, Ian Hodgkinson will not be facing you, but Vampiro will. And he grabs Pentagon by the throat, he goozles him, choke slams him for the big pop, and so that match is now official for Ultima Lucha. That's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to that. Vampiro is almost 50 years old. He's well beyond his prime. Supposedly he has a brain tumor as well, which I read about that recently. I mean, this is Vampiro. This is what he claims. I think he may have had it for the last couple of years. So you got a 50-year-old guy, you know, with a brain tumor. I would not expect a great wrestling match. It should be a wild brawl. That's what this should be. I think that's what this will be. And I am looking forward to, almost anything involving Pentagon. King Cuerno against Killshot for one of the medallions. Cuerno wins with the Dragon Sleeper into a back bridge. Not much to it. I am not as much into Cuerno as other people are. I do like Killshot, though. I want to see more of him in the second season, if there is one. Sexy Star against Superfly. Best part of this is that it was over quickly. As in, Sexy won via armbar, tap out in like 15 seconds. I didn't think this really did anybody any favors. Marty the Moth came out immediately. He said, I want a shot at the medallion. And so we had an impromptu match. Sexy Star beat another guy. She beat Marty the Moth. This woman is just running through all the men here on this roster. The end of the show had Dario Cueto come out, El Jefe. And he called out Mil Muertes and Prince Puma for a face-off before their big championship match at Ultima Lucha. This ended up just completely breaking down. Katrina came out. Her disciples came out. Conan came out. He wasn't out there at first with Puma. And Conan got beaten down, and they brought out the coffin. If you remember that coffin from Grave Consequences with the spray painting on it and everything, that Mil Muertes got carried away in. I guess that was his first death before he was reborn and came back many weeks later. So they wheeled out that casket. They put Conan in the casket, and they wheeled him out. And as that was going on, Mil Muertes laid out Prince Puma in the ring with his flatliner. And that was how we went off the air. So building to the championship match on August 5th, we have a card now, a pretty stacked card, for the two-hour show they're having on August 5th on El Rey. We've got Alberto Del El Patron against Johnny Mundo. We have Tejano against Blue Demon Jr., the newly heel Blue Demon Jr. The Disciples of Death, the guys in the skull masks, they're going to be in a six-man tag, I believe, for the Trios titles, I believe, against Son of Havoc, Ibelis, and Angelico. Hernandez against Drago. Vampiro against Pentagon Jr. and Prince Puma defending the Lucha Underground title against Mil Muertes. I would assume that's all the matches, unless they want to add one more. That's a pretty stacked card. I'm looking forward to that, August 5th. Let's get to the mailbag and your questions. Please include your name and where you are from when you write into the podcast. We have an audio question this week. I alluded to this at the beginning of the show. It comes to us from Oliver in Union City, New Jersey. And he brought a friend with him, a familiar voice that you may recognize.
Hello, Solid Monster. This is Oliver Fernandez here at the Ace Tribute Show, celebrating a hero for Mike Morgan Jr. I have an audio question, but I brought in somebody to ask it for me.
That would be none other than Black Machismo. Also, everybody calls me Jay Lethal. It's much easier to talk in this voice, so I'm going to ask my question in this voice. So the question is, whatever happened to those photos that we were supposed to get after the Ric Flair Savage match from WrestleMania 8? We were promised the exposed photos. We were guaranteed them, and we never saw them. A lot of us, like me, were heartbroken. What's up with that? What are your thoughts?
Great question there from the Ring of Honor champion. Well, listen, champ, here's the thing. Okay, I asked the same question that you did back in the day. Flair and Perfect, if you remember, they had this giant centerfold that they promised to show everybody, and they never did. They teased it, and then they lost, and then it was never spoken of again. Obviously, these photos are still out there. It's 2015. These things are up in the cloud somewhere. All we need is someone from 4chan or Anonymous to leak the images online. Although, it might be a little creepy, given that Elizabeth is no longer with us. I don't know how I'd feel about that. But, you know, she was mine before she was yours. What a great storyline that was. The one good thing about not doing Hogan vs. Flair that year at Mania is that it gave us Flair and Savage. So thanks to Jay Lethal for that. That was very cool. And Oliver, as well, for submitting that audio question. Kelvin from Worcester, Massachusetts. I'm a 15-year-old high school kid who still watches wrestling. Most of my friends have grown out of it, but I still continue to watch. Mostly my friends find it to be very childish. I convinced them to watch one episode of Raw this past Monday, and they were all blown away by Cesaro, and he's turned them into instant fans as they love how powerful he is. With this effect on people, why is Cesaro not being pushed? Well, he is kind of sort of being pushed now. I'm hoping that this is the start of something much bigger for him. It's funny you mentioned that about your friends who have grown out of it and they were blown away by Cesaro because, was it last week? Week before? I played that audio clip of me and my friend. We were having a conversation and I started recording him because he was talking about Cesaro and how, you know, he kind of half-ass pays attention sometimes when he's watching Raw and he's not as big of a fan as he used to be. But he's blown away by Cesaro when he's out there. The guy is so freakishly strong, and he's having great matches, and he's just totally into it. And he is what I would call a casual fan. He's not a hardcore fan like you and me. He watches Raw, that's it. He doesn't watch SmackDown. He doesn't watch any other wrestling promotion. He'll watch the pay-per-views when I come over to watch them with him and his wife. So he is the definition of a casual fan, and he had the same reaction that your friends had. Which I think speaks very well to Cesaro. You know, for a guy that's not going out there and cutting promos every week, it's not like he's getting promo time. And I will say, you know, promos do tend to be his weakness. But he's just going out there and working. And he's winning people over. So I don't want to hear from people who say, well, this guy can't get over with a mainstream crowd because he's this, he's that, he's boring. You're wrong. We now have anecdotal evidence that proves that you are wrong. And all you need to do is put a little effort behind the guy, and that's what they're doing. And guess what? He's getting over. He's getting over even more. So hopefully this stuff with him being on Raw in these big matches and him beating Rusev on SmackDown, you know, hopefully it's not just the setup for Rusev to turn around and beat him, you know, tonight on the pay-per-view. And then he's right back into obscurity. Hopefully it's leading to a big match for him at SummerSlam, and who knows, maybe he'll be the one to take that U.S. title from Cena. And I'm not even sure that's the best thing for him. If you remember, he was U.S. champion back in the day, and they did jack shit with him. So maybe, I don't know that putting the U.S. title back on Cesaro would actually be a good thing for his career. Jerry says, I really enjoyed the era of wrestlers as announcers. For example, Jesse Ventura, Bruno Sammartino, Macho Man, Jim Neidhart, Mr. Perfect, and Roddy Piper. I would agree, by the way, with everybody on your list except Jim Neidhart. WWE has recently featured current stars in commentary like Titus O'Neil and Jey Uso. I believe you mean Jimmy. What is your take on wrestlers as commentators, and do you feel it adds to the product? Absolutely. Absolutely. Some of the best announcers have been wrestlers. Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan, my all-time favorite announce tandem, they were wrestlers before they were announcers. Yes, Bobby Heenan was a wrestler. Jesse Ventura was a wrestler. Macho Man, okay, who some people love to rip on. Yeah, even Jim Ross, he talks about, well, it was very challenging to work with Randy as an announcer. I'm sure it was, but I enjoyed his commentary. It was a different style. You know, he was the Macho Man. But I enjoyed it. It's one of the reasons why I look at King of the Ring 93. Someone just asked me this question on Twitter yesterday. What are your favorite all-time pay-per-views? I said it's a tough call between the Rumble in 92, which didn't just have the Rumble match. It had Piper winning the Intercontinental title, which was a big moment. And you know, I love that show. And the King of the Ring 93, top to bottom, that may be my favorite pay-per-view. I'm a big fan of the first one-night stand show in 2005. I think Money in the Bank 2011, top to bottom, not just the Cena Punk match, was just a magical show. I mean, every single match, I mean, the fans were into it. They had great matches up and down the card. I mean, I can point to, like, you know, the top five pay-per-views of all time, my favorites. King of the Ring 93, one of the things I loved about it was the announce team. It was the only time we ever got Jim Ross, Bobby Heenan, and Randy Savage after WrestleMania 9. It was the final time that they were ever together as an announce team, and they just clicked. They were one of the highlights of the show to me. Savage had his own style, but you know, some people can't appreciate that, I guess, but I thought he was actually very good. Jerry Lawler, back when he actually gave a shit, you know, he was a wrestler. He still is. So, tons of guys wrestled first and then got into the announce thing later on and excelled at it. I even used to enjoy JBL. Go back and listen to the old sound offs when JBL was like first starting out, and they moved to put him on Raw and they made him an announcer, and it was almost like a breath of fresh air. And then at some point he became completely insufferable to the point where it actually hurts the show now, the fact that he's there. I just think, you know, the wrestlers, they bring a great perspective to these things, and depending on whether you need them to be a heel or if you need them to be a face, they can pull it off because they have the experience playing that role of heel or face in the ring, so it's just natural for them when they move to the announce booth. Daniel from Mexico, I just heard Ryback is injured. I know this sounds like something out of Lucha Underground, but WWE should seriously consider doing a storyline around the fact that the Intercontinental Championship has been cursed. I have no idea what the end game in that story would be. I just think it would be amusing. That could work. Okay, that could work. But only in the end if they reveal that it was Papa Shango who placed a voodoo curse on the title. And then he wins it and lifts the curse. Because once he wins the championship, right, there's no reason for it to be cursed anymore. So he lifts the curse. And then Bray Wyatt can start playing mind games with Papa Shango, and it leads to a feud with Wyatt going babyface, which I still think long-term is the role for him, where he's going to really get over as a top guy. And he could even win the Intercontinental title from Papa Shango. You know, Wyatt's mind games against Papa Shango's voodoo tricks every week on TV. I say book it. They ought to be on the phone to Charles Wright right now and tell him, hey, I hope your head's shaved. If not, shave it. We got an idea for you. Ivan from San Diego. I was at the LA Coliseum back in March, the same weekend as WrestleMania 31, for an event that drew close to 90,000 people, and it had me thinking about WrestleMania 7. It was supposed to be at the Coliseum, but instead it got moved next door to the LA Sports Arena. The real reason, of course, poor ticket sales. Was the original main event supposed to be the rematch? From WrestleMania 6 between Hulk Hogan and The Ultimate Warrior, and would that match have drawn 90 to 100,000 people? That had been the original plan. Even though they had Jack Tunney come out like the week after WrestleMania 6 and say, the match was so epic that we can never do it again. It was something ridiculous like that. Just so that it was an excuse, why are they not rematching them right away? It was because Jack Tunney said there would be no rematch. But the plan had been for them to have a rematch and for Hogan to win the belt back at WrestleMania 7. And plans changed because Warrior was kind of sort of a bust business-wise as the champion. Vince was looking for a way out. He came up with this whole storyline to capitalize off the Gulf War stuff that was going on with Iraq at the time. Operation Desert Storm or whatever it was. And he turned Sergeant Slaughter heel into an Iraqi sympathizer. He wanted to go for the patriotic angle. And that's why they took the title of Warrior at the Rumble, made Slaughter a transitional champion, and Slaughter dropped the belt right back to Hogan at WrestleMania, even though by then the war was over, number one, and number two was a stupid storyline, and it didn't work. And that had as much to do with anything why they moved that thing to the sports arena in front of 20,000 people instead of doing it in the Coliseum. I know they claimed, oh, bomb threat, right? Bomb threat. Slaughter had a lot of death threats made against him. And that may well be, but that had nothing to do with why they moved the show. It was because they were not selling tickets. Could Hogan vs. Warrior have drawn 90 to 100,000 people? No. No, I don't think so. I mean, the first match drew 60-something thousand in the Sky Dome. But this was also the rematch, right? And the rematch, unless it's like in boxing, in UFC, I mean, there are times where the rematch can actually be bigger business. But generally speaking, especially in wrestling, I mean, the rematch is not going to do as well as the original match. So that's number one. But even if it wasn't a rematch, they weren't drawing 90,000 people. It just wasn't happening. They could have drawn maybe another 60,000, but they ain't drawing 90,000. It's kind of like WrestleMania next year. Unless they come up with an amazing top of the card, like these fantasy matches that people want to see, Austin versus Lesnar and Undertaker versus Sting and Ronda Rousey against Stephanie, you know, and a lot of that's not happening. Unless they pull something out of their ass like that, they're not getting 90,000 people legit in that stadium. They can call it whatever they want to. And it sounds like UFC might actually be running Texas Stadium at the end of the year. They may be doing that Aldo-Conor McGregor fight in Texas Stadium, and they're going to get a huge crowd. And it almost doesn't even matter what UFC draws, because WWE will just lie, you know, and WrestleMania next year, they'll claim a higher number whether it's true or not. Whatever that realistic card is they put together, you know, for Mania next year, I'm sure they'll claim 95,000 people. They're not getting 90,000 people in that stadium. It's just not happening. There really is no realistic top of the card they can put together with the guys they currently have that will draw that many people. It will not happen. And I don't think it would have happened back then with Hogan and Warrior either. Cliff says, I hear a lot of people crediting the NWO as the first cool heels in wrestling, but before the NWO existed, people were cheering Ric Flair, whether he was a heel or a face. Don't you think Ric Flair was, in fact, the first cool heel in pro wrestling? Yes. Yes, he probably was. And then later on, it's funny, you know, the NWO, you know, they give the NWO credit for being cool heels and everything. But Kevin Nash, before he even joined the NWO, at the tail end of his Diesel run when he turned heel in late 95, he was the first person, at least in WWE, and I got to give Nash credit for this, he was the first, quote, cool heel in WWE. He'd come out, he cut a promo, right, that night after Survivor Series. It was the closest thing to a, you know, like a work shoot promo I think we had seen on WWE TV at that point. And he was like, listen, you know, no more kissing babies, you know, champion Diesel like you had before. If you're with me, you're with me. If I see a black glove in the crowd, I'm going to slap your hand. If I don't see a black glove, you ain't getting shit from me. That's basically what he said. And it was the first time that WWE ever had a character like that. But if you go back to the NWA, Flair with the Horsemen walking around with the big gold belt, yeah, I would say so. I would say he was probably the first cool heel. The difference between Ric Flair and the NWO was that the NWO wanted to be cheered, and they did things to make the baby faces on that show look completely inferior. Week after week after week, I mean, they made those baby faces look just like a bunch of geeks every single week, and just completely uncool. The NWO was cool. WCW was not cool, and they'd get their asses spray-painted and beaten down week after week. Even Sting, after how many months? 18 months, they built up that match with Sting and Hogan at Starrcade. Whatever happened, whoever was responsible for the end of that match, Sting looked like an idiot. He looked like a complete fool. He got pinned clean in the middle of the ring by Hulk Hogan. And he was never the same again after that. So at every turn, the NWO and those top guys protecting their spot in that group, they were not putting other people, you know, their interest ahead of their own. They were concerned about themselves, and that was it. And I think that was really the big difference between Flair and them. Flair never did that. He always put over the other guy verbally, and certainly in the ring, you know, he put them over, made them look like they belonged to hang with him. And the NWO was only in business for themselves. And I think that was really the fundamental difference between the two of them. CJ LaChapelle, I think a great way to save Dolph Ziggler and to make him a main event player is to make him a Paul Heyman guy. What do you think? No, I don't want to see that. I would say, how about just giving Ric Flair what he wants and let Ric Flair manage Dolph Ziggler? He still wants to. Flair's made comments. He would love to manage Dolph Ziggler. He thinks Ziggler could be a big star, and he just needs that little extra push, and Flair thinks he's the one that could help him. There was a time when I hated the idea because I figured he would just overshadow Ziggler, so I didn't like it. I wanted to keep Flair far away from him, but what the hell do they have to lose at this point? Now, fast forward a few years, and Ziggler's in the spot that he's in. He's in the same spot that he's always been in. What the hell do they have to lose? I mean, Flair's still going to overshadow him no matter what. He's Ric Flair. But it might end up working. It might actually end up rubbing off on Ziggler. They're not going to put Flair with a guy who's just going to lose all the time, right? So, in a way, it could be the best thing for Ziggler. Because it's almost a guarantee, okay, we've got to do something with this guy because we don't want to waste Ric. Whatever value Ric has, we're not going to put Ric with Wade Barrett, right? You're going to put Ric with a guy that they have plans for. A guy that's going to win more than he loses. So I say just give him to Ric. Michael, in Lusk, Wyoming. I was wondering what your top five predictions are for the WWE Hall of Fame next year. Mine are Demolition, Rick Rude, Miss Elizabeth, Sting, and The Undertaker. I would not induct Sting and Undertaker in the same class because they're running out of top guys to put in there. I think you can get 2 years out of that and not just dump them in the same class. I know they probably don't want to headline a class with a WCW guy, but I would spread them out. Unless they do Sting against The Undertaker next year, which I don't think they are, but if they do that match, and they announce, you know, this is going to be their last match, it's like a double retirement match between the two of them, then it would make sense to put them in that same year. It's not like you're going to go into a double retirement match and only induct Sting into the Hall of Fame, or only induct The Undertaker. Then you would put both in. It could almost be part of the promotion for the match. But otherwise, I would spread them out. I'll go ahead and I'll say Sting probably is the one who's going in next year. They could save Undertaker for the year after. Sting goes in. I think Vader, who's also overdue, he goes in. Vader, one of Sting's greatest opponents. I think the Freebirds finally go in Dallas, the perfect place for it. If it doesn't happen next year, then I don't know if it'll ever happen. So I think the Freebirds go in, and that could be, you know, they usually have like a posthumous induction every year. I mean, all the Freebirds are gone now, I think, except Michael Hayes. They're all dead. So that could double as your posthumous induction. I'd love to see Demolition get in, so I'll say Axe and Smash. I'm with you on that. I think they like to put one woman in each year. And I was thinking about what woman could they put in. Miss Elizabeth, I think, deserves to be in there. They didn't put her in with Savage. That would have been the time to do it. She may still eventually go in. But they're going to want a bigger name, somebody who's still alive, somebody who's still around. I think Sable is that person. I think, like I said, they want a woman to go in each year. They've already got her husband under contract. They got that connection there. And she is legit one of the biggest female stars they ever had. I just said it earlier in the podcast. We were talking about the Divas. Sable was a draw. She's one of the few, even more than Chyna, the only woman really who truly moved numbers for them back in the Attitude Era. She was a star. And so I think Sable maybe would be the female induction. And you round it out with a little international flavor. He could be the big international star. Jushin Thunder Liger. Since he's going to wrestle a takeover, he'll have at least one WWE match that he could say he wrestled. It'll still be kind of fresh in people's minds. He definitely deserves it. I mean, they put Antonio Inoki in there, Tatsumi Fujinami. Liger's a huge star, a little more modern than those guys, and he could be their international guy. So that's my Hall of Fame class for 2016. I think Sting, Vader, Freebirds, Demolition, Sable, and Jushin Thunder Liger. And last question here. Clyde from Dallas. After listening to you talk about the historical significance of SummerSlam 1997 last week, it made me think of a more recent scenario. How big of an impact did The Rock's injury at WrestleMania 29 have on the business today? I remember the plan for the match for the next night on Raw was supposed to be Brock Lesnar starting a feud with The Rock, leading to WrestleMania 30. If that match took place, we may not have gotten Daniel Bryan's moment of winning the main event of WrestleMania 30. Also, The Undertaker's streak may still be intact, and Brock may not be in the position he's in right now. What are your thoughts? Yeah, I would say that's a pretty big what-if question. I think, The Rock has confirmed that the plan was for him to do an angle the next night with Brock, and they were going to wrestle at WrestleMania 30. That's confirmed. That's not just rumor and speculation. So that was going to be the match. Now, if that's the case, then Undertaker doesn't lose at WrestleMania. Because I can't think of another guy. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I shouldn't say that. I can't say for sure that Undertaker would not have lost. I think the whole thing is that Vince made the decision he made because he looked at The Undertaker and he said, it's time. And Undertaker probably reluctantly went along with it. I mean, there's even... I don't know who I heard this from recently. I don't know if it was Heyman. I don't think it was Heyman. It was somebody else. That Brock didn't even want to lose. Brock asked not to. But Vince made his mind up, and that was that. So there was a lot of resistance to the idea. But, you know, they went along with it, and they did it. I wouldn't have done it, but whatever. And but if that's the case, if Vince looked at Undertaker that day and said, it's time... I guess it could have been anybody in that spot. It just happened to be Brock. It could have been Bray Wyatt. It could have been Roman Reigns. I mean, I was not a fan of breaking the streak. I would not have done that. But I remember at the time, I don't remember what episode of the Sound Off it was, the idea that I had pitched involved the Shield. Because the last time we had seen The Undertaker, he was laid out, legitimately hurt, and laid out by the Shield the year before. So The Undertaker comes back. He's looking for revenge, and it somehow turns into a gauntlet. And they promote this as, well, this is it. This is the toughest challenge The Undertaker has ever had to face. That streak is in grave jeopardy, because he's got to wrestle up to three times in one night against these young lions here. And you do a gauntlet style. Maybe he wrestles the first match against Rollins and beats Rollins. And then he has to wrestle Ambrose, and... you know, the other Shield guys get involved and it backfires. And he beats Ambrose. So he doesn't beat Ambrose as clean as he did Rollins because he's not as fresh, but he beats him. And then it comes down to Roman Reigns, who's going to be their next big guy anyway, right? And they have a competitive match, couple near falls, but in the end, Roman Reigns hits the spear and he pins The Undertaker. And the Shield, and I said this last week, where would this company be without the Shield? Where would Raw be if we didn't have Shield six-man matches all throughout 2013 and 2014, I mean, how god-awful would that show have been? The Shield has been... I mean, they built this company around these guys in a lot of ways. That's how important these guys are to WWE. So you give them the honor of being the ones to break the streak, and if you wanted to split the Shield up, you now have the seeds planted for it, because Roman Reigns could go around taking credit for ending the Undertaker streak. But the other guys get jealous and say, hey, wait a minute, we had as much to do with that as anything. We helped you do that. And then you can actually build to a Shield split. They didn't do that. They did the split with the Shield a few months later. WrestleMania, they had like a total throwaway match that year. It was such a waste of those guys. So I can't say for sure the streak would not have ended. It's very possible that he would still be undefeated and things would be very different now than they were. And you're right, maybe Daniel Bryan ends up not being in the WrestleMania main event. Things just work out a little bit differently. You know, does Batista come back? I would assume he does. I don't really see what one has to do with the other. But it does make things a little more, you know, a little more interesting. Rock and Brock would have been the main event had that match have taken place. So Bryan still could have won the championship, but he wouldn't have won it at the end of the show. I don't think it would have had as much impact if they would have had that second to last So, you know, it's impossible to say, but yeah, it's one of those what-if questions that makes you think. You know, it's kind of like, think back to 88. What if Macho Man had won the Intercontinental title from the Honky Tonk Man on that main event show? What if Honky was willing to just go along with what they wanted, and he lost the championship, and Savage had the IC strap, and Ted DiBiase was the one who won the tournament to become WWF champion that year? How different might Savage's career in that company have turned out? How different would DiBiase's career have turned out? I don't know. But it's fun to think about. So finally, buy or sell. This week's buy or sell suggestion comes to us from Ryan. On Twitter, you said as a joke to forget Bray Wyatt, Pentagon Jr. is the new face of fear. Well, say you need a new top heel, and you have a choice between Bray Wyatt and Pentagon Jr. The two are similar not only in terms of character, but in how they have been booked. Wyatt has been in limbo since he debuted, and it feels like his character has not progressed at all, with his promos growing staler and staler every week, and his only real standout match being the one with Daniel Bryan. On the other side, if you want proof that WWE is not the only company that abuses and misuses talent, look no further than AAA, where Pentagon has been nothing more than a low mid-carder and is currently tag team champions with Sexy Star. Yes, even in Mexico, Pentagon cannot drop the anchor that is Sexy Star. We haven't really seen what he can do in a long singles match, because even in AAA, he has mainly been stuck in trios and tag team matches. With all that being said, who do you buy and who do you sell? I am on record as saying that Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt are going to be the two guys to carry WWE for many years. I said this at least a year ago, a couple of years ago I said that. I still believe that. Finn Balor would probably be in that conversation now too. But with Wyatt, I think it'll be as a babyface. So no matter how stale he may be right now, and that sit-down interview that he did for .com with Michael Cole was tremendous, if you haven't seen that. It's up on YouTube. Why that didn't air on TV before the pay-per-view tonight, I have no idea. I mean, they'll probably air it on the kickoff show, but they should have aired it on Raw Monday night is what they should have done. I still think he's got a huge upside, but I think it's as a babyface. I think the fans are going to slowly turn him. It's not anything he's going to do, right? It's going to be something the fans do, and they're going to turn this guy babyface. Now, Pentagon just has the perfect look. He's got the makeup, his ring gear, that loud, intense delivery he has on the mic, even though without subtitles, I wouldn't understand most of what he's saying, other than cero miedo, right? Zero fear, I know that. But it wouldn't matter. You know, when he speaks, he just sounds like he's about ready to kick somebody's ass. He's an ass kicker. I gotta go with Pentagon on this one. If I'm building a wrestling promotion and I need a scary-looking killer heel, he's my guy. I can build around that. As long as he's at least a decent worker, and I have no reason to believe he's a bad wrestler, even though I haven't seen him work like a long singles match. I can't imagine he's bad. He's the guy. He's the guy I want to build around initially. Bray's real upside is going to be when the fans end up turning him. Pentagon can go either way, but if you book him as a heel, I think he could be a top, like, number one or number two heel in the company. So I buy Pentagon, and I sell Wyatt on this one. And we'll end with sad tweet. This week's sad tweet comes to us from an old friend, at Alex Riley, WWE, that's his handle on Twitter. He tweeted this, actually he's tweeted a lot of dumb shit this week, but I've singled out this particular tweet. Tweeted this out on Thursday, presumably to Finn Balor, and presumably he did this in character. I will caution people who look at all of Alex Riley's tweets and they mock him and all this, you know, how could he say this kind of stuff? I tend to believe him. Most of it's in character, but there are some things like this that he tweets that it doesn't really make sense to be in character, so just keep that in mind. But even in character, I think this qualifies for sad tweet of the week. It'd be even more sad if this actually was not directed at Finn Balor, if this was directed at Jushin Thunder Liger, but he can't be that stupid. He said, "You were big in Japan? Good for you. I was watching Attitude Era and punching people in the mouth the whole time. At WWE NXT. By the way, your name again?" I think the idea of Alex Riley asking somebody else, "What's your name again?" It's just funny to me on so many levels. Of all people, for him to say that. He did later tweet Let's hear from the Marks. Oh, wait, your opinion doesn't matter. You're not in the 20 by 20 scrapping for your life with boots and trunks on. I would love to know what kind of rehab for this knee injury Alex Riley is going through. What kind of medication they may have him on here. It may be affecting his brain. We may not be able to blame him entirely. It could be the pills talking, if they've got him on some painkillers. You can tweet me your own suggestion for said tweet. Let me know. At Solomonster is my handle. Or you can email it to me. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is my email address. At Solomonster on Twitter. I'll be live tweeting during the Battleground pay-per-view tonight and Raw tomorrow night. It sounds like there may be some big things planned, so follow along on there. We're all over Facebook. We have a profile page, a fan page that you can like, a private discussion group. I'll let you guys find that on your own. And also, don't forget that we have a store on Pro Wrestling Tees. ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster sounds off. Got to type in the full name of the show. We have 20 shirts up there right now. They ship all over the world up to size 5XL. So no matter how tiny or how big you may be, we have a size for you. And it's one of the best ways to support the show, by buying a shirt. If you like the podcast, if you want to support the podcast, if you're going to any of the SummerSlam events, my suggestion to you is buy a shirt right now. Buy a shirt in the next week or so. Because sometimes the shipping on these can take at least 2 weeks, and sometimes if they're really backed up, it could take more than three. And we're about a month away right now from all of those SummerSlam events in Brooklyn. And the NXT show in Brooklyn, Monday Night Raw, will be at the Barclay Center that week as well. If you want to show your support for the Sound Off by sporting a Sound Off shirt, and you haven't already got one, order one now. So that way you're guaranteed to have it in hand by the time those events roll around. And maybe I'll see you at the Barclay Center wearing a Sound Off shirt. So definitely show your support on Pro Wrestling Tees. Big thanks to TV Tracks, as always, for supporting the show and airing some clips on his channel. You can follow him, TV Tracks with an X. And I think that about does it this week. We will be back next weekend with a brand new podcast. That'll be episode 393 here on our March to 400. Thank you all so very much for your support. I would not be approaching 400 episodes if you guys weren't listening to the show. So I thank you for that. And until then, be well, stay safe, enjoy Battleground, and we'll see you right back here again for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
Watch these promos on NXT. Watch Raw. Watch a Randy Orton promo or a Sheamus promo. They never, ever look at the camera. It's because that's what they teach them now. You are not allowed to look into the camera. I think it's just completely idiotic. Why are their eyes not on me? That's how interviews always were. They're talking to me. They're speaking to us. They're supposed to be speaking to the fans. Maybe that's part of the reason why these people can't make a connection with the audience. Because they don't fucking look at us.
Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.